Please note, this article written by Scott L. of Ghostly Talk in 2004 was intended for satirical and entertainment purposes only within the paranormal community.
Welcome to Scott L.'s Guide to Conducting Your Very Own Ghost Tour.
Okay, once you have solidified the personnel within your ghost hunting group by keeping one together for more than a week, you are going to need to find a means to generate income in order to finance your operations. Ghost hunting is an expensive hobby, and it gets even more expensive when you promise t-shirts to your group with the club's sterling silver-laced logo on the back, with each member's name sewn on the front of them with real purebred stallion horsehair, for example. A real profitable and reliable method to generate income for your ghost hunting group will be to take one of the theoretically haunted highway rest stops, public bathrooms, mobile homes, or topless bars that you have investigated for paranormal activity, and for a small fee, take the, what we call in the business, people who don't know squat on a tour of the area. This will help you accomplish three things. Make you an easy ton of money. Increase your spending power in the paranormal community. And most importantly, raise your paranormal profit margin with the most minimal effort possible. There are other positives less sophisticated people have noted, like learning stuff on these tours and collecting evidence. But who is here to learn anyway, right? 1. The first thing you are going to need to do is pick the most haunted area that you know of to have your tours. That could be a tough decision, though, so I suggest talking it out with your group members to get their opinion.
Where should we have the ghost tour?
How about the Indian burial ground up the road that you pissed on while you were reciting lines from the Necronomicon last week?
Shut up! Did I ask you to talk?
How about at the old abandoned barn where you tried to
meet
that ugly crack whore from the bar the other night?
I don't remember asking for your opinion! I got it! We'll use the old cemetery. You know, the one next to the nuclear energy plant, a couple miles down the road. It's really close. Those biohazard signs they posted up all over the place, they're BS anyways.
Good work! You got over the tallest hurdle. The next thing you will need to do is develop a pricing plan for your tour. There are a few things to figure into this, so take your time with it. Here are a few examples of things you will need to take into account. A. Gas for your mom's van to transport all of your guests from the rendezvous to the haunted area. Seeing that the place that you picked out in this situation is only a couple miles away, we can say at a price of 35 cents a mile, you will be blowing around $1.40 on each ghost tour round trip. B. It would be smart to purchase a small hazard insurance policy for the safety of your patrons, but it would be cheaper to just bury them out there if they get hurt or killed, so forget it. C. Most ghost tours have hot chocolate and cookies before and after the tour, but you found a good deal on Slim Jims and were able to secure a metric ton of them for only 50 cents. So let's break this down, shall we? $1.40 per round trip for gas, $0 for hazard insurance, and finally, just to get some numbers going, a little math if I may. 50 cents divided by 1 metric ton, which equals 2,200 pounds, equals 2.3 pieces of Slim Jim per tour for the patrons to fight over at an assigned, and I stress the word assigned, value of 3 cents. That totals out to $1.43 per trip, with the standard markup of 2,500%, would equal to $35.75 per person per tour. There you go. Wasn't that easy? 2. The next thing you need to do is put together a good promotions campaign in order to attract attention to your little one-night adventures. There are a variety of ways you can advertise, such as buying ad space in publications like the Phenomena News, or the world-renowned, groundbreaking, brilliant, awe-inspiring, arousing, genius, mind-numbing, and worship paranormal talk show called Ghostly Talk. The guys from Ghostly Talk are total suckers, too. They advertise tons of stuff free of charge on their site, all for the reason of, get this, helping the paranormal community. So obviously, you're better off finding suckers like Ghostly Talk, whether you have to threaten them with public sodomizing for advertising space or not, because advertising space can be quite expensive. And seeing that you've already maxed out your mom's credit card, pawned everything your pregnant girlfriend owns, and have borrowed to the hilt from the members of your group, your options are limited. 3. Once you have executed the proper exploitation of your little event, you should have patrons lining up for miles. Your inbox should be over quota with PayPal donations. The local news station should be out in front of your house wanting an exclusive. Your snail mail should be delivered every day in a flatbed truck with envelopes stuffed full of checks and cash. Now, here is the part where you can just say forget it, run with all the money to some crack house, party all the money you made away for the next 2 weeks, and then go into hiding for the next year, which is likely. But let's just say you do not do that and decide to fulfill your obligation that you are responsible for. Put together small groups of people who sent in money of about 40 to 50 to meet at the rendezvous of your choice. Yeah, a number that will be easy to communicate with and control in a dark cemetery with no lighting whatsoever. Pile them into your mom's van, and when it gets too full, squeeze the remaining few patrons in with a plunger. After that, throw the 2.3 Slim Jims in once all the patrons are seated, or at least not screaming anymore. Once you arrive at the destination, inform your guest that you are there. There are a few rules that you should inform your guest of before you begin the tour. No punching, no biting, no kicking, and of course, no hallucinogenic drug consumption, at least until everyone gets back to the rendezvous. Make sure to point out spots as you walk through the area where violent and horrific atrocities have happened, real or not. For example,
this tree right in front of us is where Duncan Lyletta hung himself. He was in the midst of an intense autoerotic asphyxiation episode when the chair slipped. His ghost is said to have been seen in front of this tree from time to time, humping it.
That should give everyone the heebie-jeebies to the point of wetting themselves, and then your job is easy. Now all your job is stopping every couple of minutes of the tour and saying, "Did you hear that?" Or, "Did you see that?" Or, "I feel sick." After about a half an hour of this, pretty much everyone will be out for your mom's van chain-smoking and telling each other that they felt like something went through them on the tour in between taking hits from the community joint. If the cops have not shown up by now, you may want to squeeze everyone back into your mom's van because a neighbor close by is probably calling the police to tell them they smell marijuana coming from the cemetery next to their house as we speak. Drive everyone back to their rendezvous and blow them off, even if they have pertinent questions concerning the tour, by informing them that last call at your favorite bar is in 10 minutes. Hope you enjoyed the tour!
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
In 1975, five-year-old Todd Partain and his family were terrorized when some unknown creature attacked the isolated trailer home they were staying in on a dark Arkansas mountainside above the Cato River. That started Todd's Bigfoot obsession when he was 5 years old. We're going to talk today to Todd Partain of www.bigfootchannel.com. All run together, no spaces, bigfootchannel.com. And this is really timely.
Oh, isn't it?
As I'm going to be going Bigfoot hunting. So I hope to get some tips and hints along the way.
Yeah, I wonder who the geniuses were in scheduling that took care of
that. I'm calling scheduling. I'm sending a basket.
Okay.
It'll never be open.
Yeah, that one will never be
send
open.
Send Godiva chocolates, please.
I have to welcome to Ghostly Talk, very timely. Welcome to Ghostly Talk, Todd.
Hey, how's it going?
Really, really, really good. And like we were saying before, this is very timely. We might be able to get some pointers for Doug here as he goes out on his fateful mission next weekend to the woods, let's just say. The woods to find Bigfoot, possibly, or try to maybe experience something with Bigfoot. I don't know what you call a Bigfoot sighting.
That could turn into a very interesting experience. You never know. I mean,
I wonder if it'll have anything to do with Bigfoot. But one of the things is I have always wanted to go. Several things I've wanted to go. Done that a lot. Okay, I've wanted to go looking for UFOs. Mm-hmm. Have not done that. Have to still do mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go looking for Bigfoot. Right? Never done that. Coming up this weekend. And Bigfoot, and you know, like Lauren Coleman is, you know, the cryptozoologist. I got to talk to him a couple times, and he, you know, he has his interesting Bigfoot stories, and it just seems like everybody's getting all these Bigfoot experiences, and I've had none.
Yeah.
So I want some. So I'm going out this weekend. You've had some. I mean, it started at 5 years old.
Yeah, I had one experience, and that led me to make a documentary film kind of out of my hip pocket, which, you know, that story is kind of interesting in itself. But, yeah, to take you back to 1975, if you want.
Please.
Okay, all right. 1975, I'm 5 years old. We go to visit my grandfather in Arkansas. We live in Bossier City, Louisiana, and we would go up to visit my grandfather in Arkansas probably every couple of weeks. And so we go up and come to find out he's got this new place that he just got up on the side of a mountain near in the place called Caddo Gap, above the Caddo River.
Mm-hmm. Oops, I pronounced that wrong.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. I mean, you know, Caddo, Cato, you say Cato, I say Caddo, whatever.
Oh, good, but, good.
Anyway, we're in there, and my grandfather, as a, you know, is he's kind of the town constable. I don't really know. Town marshal is what they would call him. But it's kind of like being the sheriff of Mayberry, I guess.
Well, we have indeed been to Arkansas in the mountains, so we know what you're talking about.
So anyway, he deputizes my father, and they go out on patrol. And so I'm alone with my two brothers, my mother and my grandmother, in this trailer house that he's just had, you know, put in. There's still disturbed earth around where they put in the fittings and whatnot for the water lines and whatnot. So this is a brand new place. There's nobody else around. I think the nearest neighbor's got to be a mile down the road, at least. So we're in there, and it starts to get dark, and we go in to, you know, eat our spaghetti at Yo's or whatnot. And while we're sitting in there eating, my older brother, who's Mr. Tough Guy, not afraid of a thing in the world,
mm-hmm.
We notice he's sitting on the couch, and he's putting his hand up over his eyes, like somebody would shield their eyes from the sun on a sunny day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And so finally we ask him, you know, well, Keith, you know, what are you doing? And you know, my older brother, you know, never afraid of anything, and his voice was so shaky when he answered that it just, I was immediately terrified, because to know that my older brother was scared, you know, the man who's scared of nothing,
mm-hmm.
that really freaked me out. And he says that there's something looking at him through the window in the door. And so, you know, immediately my hand goes up over my eyes because I don't want to see
that. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
So my mom's like, oh, come on, you're being foolish. There's nothing out there. So my mom goes over and looks out the window. Now, on these old, this is an old trailer house, okay? Your typical country trailer house. It's in those days, all the trailer houses had these crank-open jalouse windows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Off the door. Yeah, and so that's what you've got in that situation as well. And the panes are frosted or diffused or whatnot. But the top pane was clear. I guess it had been broken out and replaced at one point. And this is where he sees the eyes. Well, my mother goes over, and she looks out, and she sees what she later describes as something that looked like a big, hairy hippie.
Oh, that sounds like me.
Yeah.
Both of us.
Sees this face, a hairy face and with glowing eyes. You know, so I'm 5 years old. I'm thinking the devil's outside. Well, she has a visible reaction to what she sees outside. She sort of gasps and, you know, steps back away from the door. Well, then, you know, by now I'm really terrified. So she yells, you know, you better get out of here. We have a gun. But, of course, you know, they didn't have a gun. They had a shotgun, but they didn't have shells for the shotgun. And there were bullets, but the pistol that the bullets went to was the one that my grandfather had with him out on patrol.
Mm.
So no telephone up there in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing starts. So my mother goes and gets a blanket and some clothespins, and they stuff this blanket and clothespins up around the door to block this thing's view.
Yeah,
now,
that'll
we never,
stop it.
Yeah. we never heard a noise from this thing until she did that. And then it just goes ballistic. It doesn't like that at all. It's making all kind of noises. There's grunts and growls and whooping sounds and this breathing. The thing I remember the most is the breathing. I mean, it sounded like this huge, immense creature breathing. And it begins to shake the trailer house and hit the side of the trailer. The thing that I was terrified of at that moment was that it was going to come through one of the windows. But looking back, it never struck a window, which was very bizarre to me now. Because had the creature been your ordinary wild animal, like a bear, cougar, or something like that, you would think that it would have attacked a window. But it never did.
Well,
excuse me?
Well, an interesting thought on that. You know, as you were just saying that, I was kind of like going, okay, I was trying to get in the mentality of the Sasquatch itself. Like you just said, like if it was any other type of animal, it would just, you know, smell food, jump through window, whatever, to get to the food.
Yeah, black bear would have came right through the window.
So. Yeah, they're not really concerned with, you know, what's in their way. They just want to get to the food, right? Or whatever may be the motivational thing. That kind of... Because we've talked, you know, with Lauren, like Doug mentioned and stuff, we've kind of talked about the mentality of these things. Like, you know, what are they, you know, are they just like animals, but they walk upright? Or do they actually think about what they're doing a little bit? And that's interesting you mentioned that, Todd, because maybe it did think like, okay, if I try to break out one of these, you know, and this is just an example, mind you. This is, you know, this is just my brain this is about as fast as my brain works, I guess.
Which is slow.
Yeah, very slow. Maybe it knew that if it tried to break out a window, it could harm itself by doing that, bottom line. I mean, there are animals in nature, because we are talking about animals here. We really are. That's one thing I've learned about cryptozoology is just that. There's a lot of animals. There are animals in nature that over time, millions of years, mind you, they've developed methods in hunting and things like that where they can reduce the risk of injury when they attack prey. Right?
Absolutely.
Same thing with the Bigfoot. Maybe, but it's a little bit more evolved. It uses its brain and says, if I start smashing windows, I got to cut myself up really bad here and hurt myself by doing
that. Well, I've never heard of a Bigfoot actually eating a human. So I'm not sure that he was like looking at prey. I wonder if it was just curious.
Curiosity. Yeah.
Have you, Todd, have you ever heard of a Bigfoot like attacking a person and eating them?
I have never heard of that actually happening. There is one account that Theodore Roosevelt used to tell about two trappers. One was murdered and apparently by a Sasquatch while the other one was out tending to the traps. They had endured some intimidation techniques by the Sasquatch the night before. They had camped out in the wilderness and they were trapping in a specific area. And this was back in, you know, the Old West. And this creature, this upright, hairy creature, you know, stood at the tree line yelling at them all night and, you know, running around their camp site and whatnot. Basically, and what we're finding is that's classic behavior of Sasquatch intimidation. And there are some stories in the actual movie that I made that actually kind of detail that a little bit. But what you deal with is you're dealing with a creature that sees human beings, I think, as competitors in its environment, and it wants you out. It's not necessarily, you know, I think that, yeah, if you put the Sasquatch into a certain position, it probably would attack you, just like anything that would be backed into, it felt like it didn't have any other choice. But I think overall you're dealing with a creature that really you have less risk of injury from than a black bear. I would be much more frightened to meet a bear in the wilderness than to meet a Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even though the Sasquatch is probably more intimidating in many ways.
Yeah, and, you know, Doug, you make a good point. I mean, yeah, I don't think you're right. I don't think it was trying to eat them, but it knew better than to try to force its way in, possibly. And for some reason, it didn't force its way in.
Right, so it didn't want in. It wanted... access to be able to watch them. It sounds curiosity to me.
Okay.
More than...
Yeah, it sounds like curiosity, and then I think when it realized that we had, you know, this presence, this cover was blown or whatnot, I think then it decided to try some intimidation factors on us. Who knows what was going through his mind at that point.
Did your grandparents end up moving, or did they stay
there? Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, he did.
Wow.
The kind of interesting thing and kind of the thing I'd like to touch on about the whole incident is kind of the conspiracy. And there's an author named Eric Penns who wrote a very, very nice book called Cryptid, The Lost Legend of Lewis and Clark. Mm-hmm. And he speaks of the conspiracy in our own minds, which is something that... that I've always wondered about, and that is the thing where something like this happens and people shut it out of their, and, you know, as a very young child, I shut it out of my memory for a long time, or tried to, and really couldn't. My younger brother did completely shut it out of his memory until adulthood, and he was about a year younger than I was. He was only about four, so he was able to do that better, I guess, than I was. But there is this thing I call the conspiracy in our own minds where we tend to, you know, we don't talk about things like that a lot of times in the old days. And in the family I was raised in, we didn't really sit around and talk about it. I mean, after it happened, it was kind of, in a sort of a way, psychologically covered up.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, you know, after all the stuff died down, the next morning we left and I saw these huge footprints that were just like human footprints, except they were just really big. And so that cemented in my mind that this had not been a bear or a cougar or anything else, that this was some type of humanoid creature. And my grandfather's explanation to my mom, I believe, was, oh, it was probably an old mountain man or something who had a steel up here on the mountain or something of that nature, but no mountain man could have done that. That trailer, I mean, that was just completely, the outside was just completely devastated. And when we went back, the next time we went to Arkansas, my grandfather had moved to a different location.
Wow.
Interesting.
Now, as far as, you were talking about this intimidation factor thing that was reported. I'm just curious about this. They yell, they scream, they do all types of stuff to try to scare off, I guess.
Yeah, normally if you're in the, one of the most common things that I've heard about personally and have read about many accounts as well, is something that actually happened to my father when he was a young boy down around Leesville, Louisiana, and it's what we call shadowing or paralleling. And what happens is usually it's a hunter who's alone in the woods. He notices that everything goes quiet around him. The normal activity of the woods silences, and whenever he makes a move, there is some creature nearby just out of sight in the thickness of the underbrush or whatnot that makes the same exact move. You take a step, it takes a step. You take three steps, it takes three steps.
That's like nightmarish, man.
Yeah, it's always right out of sight, just a little ways, you know, just right out of sight so you can't see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell it's big, and you can tell it's bipedal. Mm. And that's normally what happens, and in some cases people have tree limbs thrown at them. Rocks are thrown, nuts, things like that. It's just classic, and some people hear teeth gnashing.
Oh, God, no, I'd be out of there, bye.
Yeah, those are, and as a matter of fact, the teeth gnashing and things of that nature are actually classic great ape intimidation behaviors.
Well, you know, we've discussed that a little bit, too, concerning the Sasquatch, is, you know, how closely is it related to, you know, I mean, obviously when people say, you know, you think of Bigfoot, the second thing that comes to mind when you're trying to make comparison is, you know, gorillas, you know, apes and stuff like that. And that right there, you just said that's actual behavior of these particular species next to Bigfoot, teeth gnashing, for example. You can actually hear that, though?
That's what I've been told. Several people have mentioned that. And usually the Sasquatch at one point will show itself briefly. There's one story that I was told here recently where a gentleman told me he was down here in Louisiana in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
This happened to him, and he was only about 15 years old when this happened, out hunting by himself. He was told by his uncle, whose land he was hunting on, make sure you make it back here before dark. And it was getting around dusk when all this happened, and so he finally gets scared enough to where he takes off running, and the Sasquatch actually crossed the trail in front of him in the direction that he was running.
Really?
And that was his sighting. And so he runs, he drops his gun, you know, everything he's got, and he just runs straight for his uncle's house. Gets to his uncle's house, and his uncle is just very angry with him for not getting back before dark. And it was some time later that his uncle admits to him that he's had experiences out there, too. And what he finds out is that when his uncle was a child, the forest out there behind his uncle's house has been cleared, about 60 acres, just completely clear-cut. And what he found out later from his uncle was that when his uncle was a child, he lived in the same house, and his aunt was just a small child, about 4 or 5 years old, and they were out in the backyard playing on the swing set, and the tree line came right up to the house, just about 10 or 20 feet from behind the house.
Mm-hmm.
One day they're out playing in the backyard, and mother sticks her head out and is coming in to eat. He walks in. This is his uncle. His uncle walks in, and they say, "Where's your little sister?" And he's like, "Well, I don't know." He turns around, and she's not out there. So they mount this search for her, and they find his little sister about 100 yards back in the woods. She's alive. She's terrified. She's stuffed into a hollow tree, and she's dripping wet with what appears to be urine of some kind. Something has urinated.
Oh, my.
Oh, my God.
And so it's believed that they were in trying to intimidate his grandfather.
My God.
Yeah. So when his uncle got control of the house, he had the entire area clear cut around the back of his house.
Oh wow!
I don't blame him.
Yeah, you know, kidding.
Jeez. Pretty scary.
So in that case, you've got. What you've got is a creature that is smart enough to know what's going to terrify you the most and show you that, you know, we could have done something more than this to your daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Right.
That is just scary.
It sent a message, that's for sure.
Yeah, they know how to, you know, create these forms of intimidation. So in response to your question about their intelligence level, mm-hmm. I'd have to say they're very intelligent. Now, I don't think a Sasquatch can operate a car.
Mm-hmm.
Or operate some technology the way that we do, but you have to remember that when you're in the wilderness, it doesn't matter who you are, how good of a hunter you are, or how good of a hunter you think you are, which is the case with a lot of folks we have in this part of the country.
yeah, we're in Michigan, too.
But anyway, it doesn't matter how good you think you are. You're dealing with a creature who lives in the forest 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and when you go into the forest, you're in his living room. You're in his backyard. He knows every inch of the place, and you do not. So when you're out in the wilderness, it doesn't matter, you know, what you've got with you, what kind of high-tech devices you've got, how much firepower you have. This creature is smarter than you are when you're in the wilderness.
Well, yeah, it's a different level of intelligence, basically. I mean, yeah, like you just said, Todd, yeah, I don't think they can drive a car or operate a computer or
anything
like that.
But I think some of them probably do have MySpace pages. But what we're going to do, talk about after a break, because we have to take a break, independent music, playing on the breaks, people on the telephone line won't be able to hear the music.
I want to talk more about the DVD.
Yeah. I want to talk about Eyes in the Dark.
Yeah, I want to talk about the DVD.
And then I want to get some hints and tips for my own experience.
Todd has agreed to help us out.
Yes. Because I'm going to run through.
Help you out. I'm not going to be there.
Sasquatch's forest this upcoming weekend, his backyard, and I'm not going to know anything, and I won't even know where the bathroom is. So we're going to have to find out about Eyes in the Dark and about what I can expect this upcoming weekend from Todd when we get back. Until then, BigfootChannel.com.
For more information, visit GhostlyTalk.com.
The charm and mystery of the Deep South through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour.
Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble mill workers' apartments are some of the haunted sights you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasures, planetary
Out there.
Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
Listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
Velcro Lewis and his 100-proof band.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, those guys. That song, I remember that band because that song is just a totally cool. It's called Steppin' and Sippin'.
Oh,
which if you
awesome.
Listen to the tune, it's you can just picture some dude like just walking down the street with a bottle of Jack in his hand or something, just like, you know, just walking along, drinking. Great song. I love that tune. Actually, if you listen, here's a little thing I'm going to throw out to the listeners. I played two guides tonight because I just thought, you know, it'd be cool to do that. For the second break tonight, I played, you know, my first guide, a guide to joining a ghost hunting group. And then the last break at 8 o'clock, I played the newest one that we were pimping last week, right?
How to do a
ghost tour, right? If you listen close to the third one, there's the interlude, like the voice thing, where they're trying to figure out, you know, let's do a ghost hunt. They're talking about that or whatever. And if you listen close in the background music, I used that music, actually. I liked it so much. I thought it was cool. When I was picking music out for this week, I'm like, oh, I might as well just play that song. And it's all its glory, you know. It's a great tune. So, all right, enough pimping music.
Thank you, Velcro Lewis.
Yeah, great bunch of guys. Thank you.
We're talking with Todd Partain of www.bigfootchannel.com, learning all about the beast.
Oh, yeah.
And we're and how he evidently intimidates.
Man.
I'm actually kind of glad about that, Todd, because I'd rather be intimidated than, like, you know, chased.
Beat up.
Because I don't run very fast or far. So intimidation I can handle. You know, I'll be like, oh, he's intimidating. I'm gonna walk away. And if he'll let me walk away, I'll be okay. But if he makes me run away, bye bye, Doug. You know.
If you get away at all, it's because you were allowed to.
Yeah.
As Scott Harriet once said, you know, when someone said, you know, there's never been any credible report of a Sasquatch ever harming anyone, then Scott Harriet said, well, there's plenty of incredible ones.
Well, it's the truth. I mean, there's so many people that have reported that, you know, seeing this creature. And what I find interesting, we were talking about this, you know, in the last segment, the intelligence level this animal seems to have. I mean, I think what the first thing people think of, again, when they think of the Sasquatch is, you know, just some, you know, dumb thing roaming the forest that, you know, eats small rodents or whatever. And I think after talking to you and other people, Todd, it seems like this animal is much more intelligent than people give it credit for. And like you said, it owns the forest. It knows that forest inside and out. My thing always, and I want to talk about this DVD big time here, but one thing we asked Lauren this a long time ago. It's like, why does the thing seem to be so elusive? Why does the thing always seem, like you said, it was shadowing people, right?
Right.
I mean, one has never seemed to, I've never heard of a story where one has seemed to just jump out and go, hi, I'm Bigfoot. How you guys doing? You've been talking about me for the last 40, 50 years. I'm wondering, you know, hey, how you doing? Hey, you want pictures? Take a picture of me. Hey, you want an interview? No problem. I'll sit down and do Nightline or whatever, you know, with whoever. This animal, it seems to be very elusive. I mean, sightings that have been seen, it runs across the road, and that's all you see. I'm wondering, is it scared? What's your impression on that, Todd, of why this thing is just so elusive?
Absolutely. I think it has a very healthy fear of us. you know, you think about it for a moment. Our technology, it must be very frightening.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we drive around in cars. I mean, how do you comprehend that if you're not a human being?
Okay.
How do you comprehend the power of a rifle? And these things, you know, they've been around long enough to see us, you know, use rifles and whatnot. You know, because you're not dealing with a creature. A lot of people talk about, oh, the Bigfoot myth started back in the 50s. No, it did not.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Sasquatch phenomenon has been going on since recorded history.
Mm.
Native American tribes, almost all of them have a Sasquatch, legend. There are just, there are many of reports of Shoshomish tribes and, even the Blackfoot Indian tribe and the Caddo Indians and all of them. And they have, you know, different, stories.
Mm-hmm.
The Lucifalia, I mean, there's, it goes by many names, but it's described the same way. And the Native Americans did not see, you know, the thing about Native American folklore is, you know, they ascribe supernatural powers to a lot of different animals. So it's very hard to filter out, you know, if are they talking about something real? Is it something, you know, that's just from the religious viewpoint? But it would seem that they considered it to be just another creature that lived in the wilderness and had, you know, special powers. And in some native tribes, they considered it to be a different tribe.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this too, what I just said, as far as how elusive the creature is. You just can't go out and find a bear. You just can't go out and find a deer either. You just don't see them. I mean,
otherwise they don't call it hunting.
Well, you may see them a little more frequently. Right, like you'll see deer.
Now we think of, you think of population densities. People go, well, you know, how come we've never found a dead one? Well, you know, I've been in the woods quite a bit, not as much as some people. I've never found a dead bear, but I know there are bear in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And from the estimation, the general belief is that the population of these creatures is about probably 1/6. Of the bear population in the United States. So if it's rare to see a bear, it's even more so rare to see a Sasquatch. You've got to think also that you're dealing with a creature that not only possesses near-human intellect, it also possesses all of the senses, the heightened senses that an animal in the forest has. It has a heightened sense of smell. It has a heightened sense of vision. We believe that it has a very advanced form of reflective night vision, which accounts for a lot of the red eye reports and glowing eye reports.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that we're dealing with a creature that, because of its large eye, you know, much larger than human eye, it also has a very highly reflective surface inside the eye that amplifies existing light. We believe this creature has the ability to see in almost total darkness. We also believe, you know, of course, it has a heightened sense of smell, a heightened sense of hearing. So if you're dealing with a creature that has all of these abilities, the ability to move like lightning through the woods, the ability to crash through whatever it needs to crash through to get away from you, things that a human being is simply not strong enough to crash through when it comes to underbrush and whatnot. And you're going to discover this when you're up in New York. If there's any underbrush at all and you get caught in it, you'll understand that, you know, it's very hard to move through the woods sometimes. And now down here in the South, I don't know about the woods up in New York because I've never been. But I can tell you that down here in Louisiana, this is a very lush environment. You know, the swamps, there are just dense woods that that you just really can't even walk through because of the underbrush. And these creatures can move through this type of environment with no trouble at all. And only now are we starting to get really serious about hunting for Sasquatch. Now we're starting to bring high technology, and there's a belief that very soon, within the next 10 to 20 years, we will have definitive proof, simply because there's more attention being focused now than ever the fact that there is an elusive creature out there that needs to be protected and discovered and documented.
That makes a lot of sense to me now.
Well, I'll have my camera phone, so we will see. No.
But that makes sense. I mean,
I'll bring more than that.
As far as this whole aspect, I never thought about it that way. You know, like, oh, why is the thing so elusive? Well, every animal is elusive, it seems like.
Absolutely. Now, I've seen dead deer in the woods. I mean,
yeah.
But deer have a very, especially down here, the white-tailed deer population is very dense. They call this place sportsman's paradise simply because we have so many deer here. that deer hunters just love to come down here and hunt deer.
Same here in Michigan. I mean, this is, again, another sports hunter, sportsman's
paradise. We're the Wolverine state, and I don't think I've ever seen actually even a Wolverine.
I've never even seen a Wolverine.
Let alone a dead one. So
I mean, we see squirrels more than
all kinds of creatures in the woods, and during my entire life, I've only seen one bobcat in the woods, and that's crossing in front of me on our road, and I've seen probably two foxes. I've seen one coyote in my lifetime, and you know, and one red wolf, but I've never seen, I've never seen a bear. I've seen bear tracks. I made a point to go and see some bear tracks one time because I'd heard that there was a bear in a particular area, and I went out and talked to the owner of the land, and he took me back. This was around Dubberly, Louisiana. He took me back and showed me the bear tracks, and I wanted to. One of the reasons I was doing that is I was trying to come to terms with what happened when I was a kid, because I remember seeing the humanoid footprint, and a lot of people had tried to explain that whole incident away as, it was probably a bear, but that was not a bear track. Simply was not.
Well, and I don't think bear, I mean, I wasn't there, obviously, but bears
don't usually work by intimidation or anything.
Well, bear feet, bear feet generally are, I mean, as far as like a humanoid foot.
They're not human.
Yeah, they're not really, they're very different. So if seeing a humanoid type foot, you're going to know what it is when you see it. So
why?
And the track pattern also is different.
Okay.
Why did you make the DVD then? Is it an exploration into your own coming to terms with the early experience, or is it... I did all this research, and I need to present it. What went into that?
Well, what happened was, after that incident, I sort of developed an interest in the unexplained. Read lots of books, Lauren Coleman, Kiel, a lot of the other ones. And always had an interest kind of in the background about such things. And I got involved a little bit in video and film production in my early 20s. Unfortunately, at that time in this area, you couldn't make a living doing that, so I ended up going to work for the phone company, and I'm a telephone lineman, actually, by trade. And my older brother, who was, one of the people to actually see something that night, passed away about 3 years ago. And I realized that one of the key witnesses to those events was gone, and I would never have an opportunity to get his story down on video again. So I realized I needed to go ahead and go forth and do this. I had some equipment left over from a small production company that I had run for a while, and it was just gathering dust. So I grabbed it, and I heard about there was going to be a Bigfoot convention, and I said, I told my wife, I'm going to jump in, I'm going to go do this. And I told her what I was going to do, and she goes, you're crazy, but go ahead and go do it, you know. Because she wasn't, my wife was used to, me doing unusual things, because I once built a hovercraft in the garage, so... she expects just about anything. But I went down and did that, and just got more and more stories together, and got a friend of mine to. I made a costume in my garage. The crazy thing about this whole thing was this whole time I'm funding this out of my hip pocket. I'm rolling up change, to pay for film processing and things of that nature. And we just kind of went forth and did what we could. And I built a Sasquatch costume for a friend of mine who's just this huge guy. And we went out and shot recreations of some of the stories that we got on tape, and put it together and made a video. And I'm actually quite shocked that it's done as well as it has. It's selling on Amazon. .com, and also you can get an autographed copy at BigfootChannel.com. It's really done more than I ever thought it would do. I thought it was just going to be something I was going to make a few copies of and give out to my friends, but it just kind of took off, and I've just kind of gone with the flow on that, and a lot of people seem to want to see it, so I had some dubs made, and I send them out.
Well, documenting things like this is, obviously it's important to do. You're a person that's experienced this firsthand, and like you said, you're one of the only people from this particular situation that we've been talking about that's here to do this thing. So why not get it down right now? Here's my story, and I even went even further to flesh it out for you and actually recreate it, and to give you a good idea of what happened here. I think it's a great cross-referencing tool for other people. I mean, other people have had these experiences, right? Lots of people have had these experiences.
And that's one of the reasons that you do something like that. You want other people to come forward and tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
People. And because once we talk about it and we get it out in the open, it doesn't become a it's not so much a hidden, like, traumatic thing as it is, other people have had this experience, a lot of other people. And people think, they saw Bigfoot in 1967 and the guy got a footage of it and that's pretty much, it. Well, that's not it. There are people all over the country. Anywhere you have a forested region, you have these experiences. And, there are a lot of different theories about, what Bigfoot is. Some people say, it's a flesh and blood creature. Other people go off into a mystical type thing, say he's interdimensional. I can't go that far personally.
Yeah.
but I understand, the thought process. And I say this, I'm 37 years old. I've seen a lot of strange things. And I don't discount anything. I'm saying that, nothing, everything is possible. And I set out to, this was kind of my dream, to set out and make this independent film, because I had been involved in another film that was about Sasquatch that was run by another company, and I didn't like what they did with it because it turned into a mockumentary. And
right.
That didn't sit well with me. I don't mind a little comedy, but, I mean, they were making fun of people. And when someone comes forward to do something knowing that they could be made fun of, I'm not going to put them in a position where they're going to get hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And, I'm gonna treat their story with every bit of veracity that I can.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go out there sometimes. You think to yourself, well, I can't go out and do this, but you can. I mean, just like you say, Scott, to do the dream is not a dream; it is a must.
Somebody's been reading my bio.
Not bad,
but it's the truth. That is the truth. You're right. I mean, I gotta say, Todd, that's the reason we have offers that come up for all kinds of things. Hey, you want to be on this thing, and you want to do this thing, and we're going to be big stars and this stuff. And Doug and I, our whole organization of our, three, four people. we tread very cautiously on these things because some of the situations that we kind of looked at each other and said, this could be kind of iffy here. I don't know if I want to do this. Usually we're right. Usually we're right, and it turns into something like you just said, Todd, a mockumentary. And we like to think the work we do as far as field work and the stuff we present here, it's as honest as it can get. It's as real as it can get, too. And we're not making jokes out of anything that comes on here either. We are interested
in
this.
As a matter of fact, we like it so much that I'm going looking for
Yeah, there you go. I mean, this is
go setting, and we go to the conventions. Eyes in the Dark. The Sasquatch Experience
mm-hmm.
is a DVD. It's available at BigfootChannel.com mm-hmm. and, of course, Amazon.com, that kind of thing. So you've been out and about. You've been making these films. You live in Louisiana, and you've had a Bigfoot experience in Arkansas. I'm going Bigfoot hunting to the woods this upcoming weekend.
What can we do to save Doug's life? We need him here on the show, okay? So we don't want him to die on us.
I think the most important thing to remember is to bring plenty of insect repellent.
Yeah.
Just bring all the things you would normally bring if you're going to be out in the woods, because chances are you're going to spend a lot of time out in the woods and you probably won't see a darn thing.
Probably.
But, 9 out of 10 times. But, the one time you get out there and you do find a track or you do have some type of an experience, that's a pearl that you will remember your whole life. And so why pass that opportunity up? Go out there and do it. Go out in the woods and go see what you can see. And, I mean, obviously take whatever precautions you have to protect yourself. But at the same time, keep an open mind, toward the experience itself. And you just might have an experience you'll never forget.
One of the things I'm looking forward to is that I grew up in Michigan, and we have some pretty interestingly, wooded areas here in Michigan, obviously. And my grandmother had a cabin up north, and there were woods behind, 80 acres of woods behind the cabin. Actually, more than that, but she owned 80 of them.
Now it's probably a bunch of coffee houses.
Yeah, now it's all, warehouses.
Retail stores.
Mm-hmm. Warehouses for distribution centers, Netflix and stuff. But anyway, so what happens is the with 80 acres, and it was very wooded. And I remember being in the woods, and I know that there are certain levels of observation that you can have. For example, you know, wandering through the woods with my dad was completely different than wandering through the woods alone or with my brothers, because when my dad was with us, he'd be like, "Oh," and then everyone would pause, everyone would stop, like dead cold. There's a deer over there, or there's a fox, or there, you know, and he's seeing all this stuff go down, you know, and I look, and it just looks like a bunch of trees, you know, and he knows what to look for, things like that. So what I'm interested in knowing is, as somebody who's not an experienced woodsman, what can I see?
Frankly,
when
Doug, I'm surprised you're going to spend time in the woods. You're not a woods person.
No, I'm not. I hang out in coffee shops listening to Tone and Niche, and I'm going to go tracing through the woods. But it's going to be valuable for me, because even if I don't see Bigfoot, I'd like to see Bigfoot. Evidently, he's been spotted up there several times in the past couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't see him myself, I will at least get the woods experience, and I will know as an adult how much, what is the power of observation that, a hip and cool urban or slightly suburban, slightly urban, coffee shop folk music artist listening member of society would have. What level of observation do I have? And what can I see, and what do the other people see when they're out there? And how much can it play tricks on your mind and things like that? I'm looking forward to learning a lot about being out of doors this weekend.
Mm.
Yeah, you're gonna have a definitely an eye-opening experience, not just in the Sasquatch area, but also just in the difference in perception that you're going to have to develop just being in the wilderness as opposed to being in the city.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into the wilderness, you can be very overwhelming to be in the wilderness. Because everything, you know, it looks like you walk for a mile or so, and you know, everything looks the same. And you know, you have that experience, but you learn after a while. Your perception will alter itself, and you'll become more aware of out-of-place things. Obviously, you look for tracks. You could see tree breaks. A lot of times a Sasquatch marks the border of its territory that it's trying to stake out by breaking large tree limbs and putting them across the trail in an X or a diagonal fashion, breaking them and putting them across the trail, positioning the breaks so that they're lying across the trail, I should say. But also, if you're in the proximity of a Sasquatch, there is a smell that we believe is a glandular, a lot of us believe that it's a glandular emission. That there are scent glands, we believe, that where this creature can emit a smell. And it's been proven in recent years that great apes also do this, that they can emit a smell when they're trying to intimidate you.
Ooh.
It's a very, very putrid smell. It's been described as a mixture of raw sewage and a skunk and a moldy animal.
Mm, yummy.
But
I can make that smell too, but usually it's after Mexican food.
No. Oh.
But anyway,
come on.
We have 1 minute left.
Great way to end the show, Doug.
I know. We have 1 minute left or less. I want to know if making an owl call will call Bigfoot.
Todd.
I don't know.
Okay.
Where'd you get that one?
I've heard they're like cinnamon graham crackers, though, so take some with you.
Oh,
cinnamon graham crackers.
I will pick some up. Because
not that dollar store crap either. Get the name brand.
Oh.
They want the good stuff.
All right. Well, since it's once in a lifetime, right? You know.
Yeah, spend the extra
Todd,
20 cents.
Todd Tartain, your DVD, of course, is Eyes in the Dark, the Sasquatch Experience, and your website, BigfootChannel.com. The DVD is available there or on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you, Todd. Yeah, hang on the line for 1 second. Don't leave us just yet, okay?
Okay.
Wow, guys. What a week.
Next week I will be live from somewhere. I don't know where.
You're on your way to Gettysburg.
Ticket.
I don't know.
I got the bus ticket. I'm just going to drop me off somewhere. I'm going to, you know, I'll find out.
Yeah.
I'll know next week.
We'll get this all worked out, though. We're going to probably have some surprise guest host drop in. A lot of guests next week. It's going to be one of those.
See, when I go away, poof. I get
apparently
replaced
it takes
like
five
that.
People to replace you. I go away and he's like, she's just not here.
Well, next week I'm going to be calling in. Yeah, that's how it works, Todd. Next week I'm going to be calling in on the listener line, the 605-475-8590.
Yeah, you'll be here.
I'll be dialing 555-1081. I'll be on the listener line just like everybody else. So everybody write that down. Join me on the listener line next week. Hopefully you'll unmute me when I ask, and I can join the show.
Until, it's fun to play God.
Until next week, this has been Ghostly Talk, and I've been Doug.
I have been Scott L.
And I'm still Bonnie.
Take it easy.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. To listen to loudly.
We'll make it ourselves. Don't hate the media, become the media.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Don't hate the media, become the media.